All right, settle down, you rascals. We got a jam-packed agenda for the Shelter from Oblivion today. First things first, Aloysius, snack report. How are our supplies holding up?
We're looking good.
Is there enough pie left over? We have to fuel up for tomorrow's freeze tag game against Ricky's gang.
Yay!
Secondly, how's the lookout detail holding up?
Perimeter secure, sir.
We don't want any pesky grown-ups snooping on our clubhouse. Finally, any new business for the floor? Spit it out, fellas. We gotta make the most of the place before baseball practice.
Last night, I get done with Monster Squad, and what's on the 80s Rewind channel? Fright Night.
Oh my God, I need to watch
so
that.
So I bounced from Monster Squad directly into the
Which
end of Fright Night.
What you would have done on one of those free cable weekends.
Oh,
you would have saw Monster Squad, and then you would have saw Fright Night.
Yeah, I got in right a little bit before Evil Ed bites it, where he's a wolf, and then he's slowly like turning back into a person. The special effects really hold up. They are so good. Welcome to Shelter from Oblivion, everyone.
I'm Andy.
I'm Matt. And we got my pet monster over on the ones and the twos. He's putting our levels together. And it is good to be back. It is very, very good to be back down here in the warm embrace of all of our yesterhood. I don't know, I've coined that word now. So no one else use yesterhood unless you send me a check. We got a shelter full of snacks today. All the things that you've come to love. We got Pringles. We got Coke. We got fizzy drinks. We got Hershey's
Lemon
bars.
Heads.
And why is that? Because those are all the things that you put in your face after you build a fort. And we are going to talk about forts today. We're going to talk about clubhouses. We're going to talk about hideouts. What do you think makes better material? Do you think pillows or blankets ultimately make a better fort?
Yeah, see, I think pillows are fun, but like you can never get that structural integrity. They always seem to like when I like fall down on each other. Blankets, you can use the pillows to kind of give yourself more headroom to spread out a little further.
Yeah.
But then the pillows make it feel a little bit more homey. So I think sometimes it always becomes like a hybrid of the two is a perfect little fort.
Yeah, because I feel like if you're going to have like nobody's house has enough pillows to make a fort completely out of pillows.
Yeah.
So I feel like you always end up having to get furniture involved.
Yeah, and then someone always wants to take back, give me just one seat cushion back.
Yeah, so it's like you can never get the walls high enough. You can never really get, because the point of a fort, or like for some reason when you're building it, is to get all the light out. You can't have light showing anywhere. And so blankets are obviously the go-to for that because you can throw them across everything. And then, yeah, you use pillows for like your brick and mortar. Like you use it to build out the walls and everything.
The corners, sometimes a little at the top.
Yeah, I feel like that's the way to go for sure.
You thinking what I'm thinking? We're too big for this, aren't we?
Yeah. Bet if we went two pillows higher in the corner, we could vault the ceiling, bump up the square footage, make this a blanket fort for men.
When we built our fort, like, because the building's like the fun part.
Yeah.
Because we would build the fort and then you'd go scramble into the other room and you'd grab all the provisions. Like, for some reason, you had to stock this thing. You had to build it and then you had to stock it like you were going on the Oregon Trail. And so you have to go in the other room and you have to find, like, you know, chips and marshmallows and, like, you know, if you, like, obviously my house was filled with candy that we could take in. So it's like you would get, you know, like gummy bears and whatever you could, obviously all junk food.
Yeah.
There's no apples going into this place, right? No oranges, no, you know, healthy granola bars. Yeah. Nothing's
none
getting
of those freeze-dried banana chips.
No. None of that is getting dragged into the fort. So it's like you would get all that stuff in there and then you'd be like, okay, now we're in our fort. We've got our flashlight.
We've
got
all this food junk food. In case the power goes out or something.
And then it's like, now what?
Yeah.
Now what do you do now?
I live even at a young age. We know if we're going to go somewhere confined for a long time, we're going to get bored. And if we get bored, we're going to just want some snacks.
Yeah.
I am a mom. And my job is to eat things. One really fun thing I get to eat is Twizzlers candy. It makes me happy. They're so chewy. And their fruity flavor is so juicy. So if you have a mouth, and I know you do, may I personally recommend Twizzlers.
Like, the Batcave is not a hideout to me.
Yeah, it's more like his research center. It's
It could
be his man cave, I guess, but it would not be a hideout. It's not a. He doesn't invite anyone down there.
Yeah, and so it's like, well, Vicky Vale got invited down, but that was.
I'm sure
Alfred
did that. Some comic book fans weren't happy about that, I'm sure.
I turn around and it says, oh, hi, Vale. Like, if you're doing work in this place, like actual work, like in the Batcave, that's how the Batcave is a headquarters. Because originally I had picked.
When your dad goes to the tool shed, that's not his clubhouse. That's not his fort. It's a little place where he closes the door and does some good work.
Yeah, well, like the Hall of Justice would be a clubhouse. But the Batcave, it's very solemn. You don't bring a lot of people in there. That's a place for work. That's a headquarters. Also, I was going to pick the Shirt Tails. Oh. They have, I think, what they call a hideout underneath a tree in Central Park. And it's dope. It's very cool. There's lots of awesome stuff there. They have like a big holographic computer. They have all these great lights hanging down. It's really cool. Like, they have all their own living spaces. It's a choice venue.
Yeah.
But I would also consider that a headquarters. I don't think that's a hideout because they're not hiding from anybody down there. They're doing work down there.
Yeah. The same way, like, you know, the Ghostbusters, like, they live up above, you know, their fire station. They go down the pole.
Yeah.
That's not a clubhouse or a fort. That's where they work out of. I think that would be kind of closer to what the shirt tells.
That's also an HQ. Know. That's a headquarters.
Yeah, the firefighters and all that. That's their headquarters.
See, and the same thing I would say with lairs.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my underground lair.
Because something on my list, I think somebody would be like, no, that's not really a hideout. That's a lair. I think a lair, in my opinion, you can disagree with me, is sort of, first of all, keyed towards bad guys. I think that's more of a villain thing. It doesn't always have to be. But I think, like, you'd look at something like Snake Mountain. Skeletor isn't hiding out in Snake Mountain. He-Man knows where Snake Mountain is.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty easy to find. It's that serpent spewing lava right over on the other hill. So he's not hiding in there.
Yeah.
He is working in there. That is where he is hatching his evil schemes.
His own Pentagon, if you will.
Right. That's where Beast Man is brushing his hair at night, 100 strokes to keep it clean. So it's both a place that they're living, but it's also a place that they're scheming. I think a lair has to be somewhere where you scheme.
Yeah.
Right? Hideouts are where you're just hiding. Like, there's not a lot of work being done there. You're just cooling off.
A hideout could even be a starter lair where it hasn't turned into a lair yet. You haven't got there yet.
Yeah.
You're still recruiting people into your hideout. And maybe someday you might get big enough that it turns into a lair, but it's not that yet.
No. Because you don't have any schemes. That's the thing. You're still getting ready. You haven't penned any of your schemes or your plans.
Maybe a little petty crime here and there, but nothing.
Yeah. And you're going out. You're committing the crimes. And then you're coming back and you're being low key, right? You're on the lam.
Yeah.
Somebody would really like to have the volcano island from what, You Only Live Twice.
Yeah.
Right? Blofeld's cool island. That is also definitely a lair.
He is not
hiding out there. I'm just going to keep quiet and not keep building these giant rockets.
I mean, Tom Waits might be like, what's going on in there?
Like, this, this man is employing probably a working population the size of my hometown. You know, he is not hiding from anyone. he's just also not really bragging that he has his own cool, like, volcano missile island.
James Bond, allow me to introduce myself. I am Ernst Stavro Blofeld. They told me you were assassinated in Hong Kong.
Yes, this is my second life.
You only live twice, Mr. Bond.
Of course, when I think of Clubhouse, I immediately think of the Clubhouse from Monster Squad. Hey! Rock until you drop. Dance until your heart
stops. That was a great Clubhouse. No one had a treehouse that had that structural integrity.
I'm watching this movie last night, and I've watched Monster Squad I don't know how many times.
You and I, back in the day when a lot of people didn't know what Monster Squad was and you couldn't find it in VHS, that's sort of how we bonded when we first became friends.
That movie is just so good. And it's still good. And now it's weird because I'm looking at it through the lens of an adult and it's still a great movie, but almost for like different reasons than I thought as a kid. I digress very far.
Back to the Clubhouse.
The Clubhouse itself, in the words of the actual shooting script, I think it's beautiful. It has in here, male adolescent paradise, comic books, toys, magazines, posters, movie stills, all the Aurora monster models, including forgotten prisoner of Castle Mare, who isn't really a monster, but hell with it. And you couldn't have, from that description, matched that Clubhouse any better. It is an absolute delight. When I was a kid, I would have lost my mind to have a space like that. You have, first of all, two inhumanoids that I could see. You have the decomposed figure and you have the tendril figure. Those things are gigantic. Are you familiar with inhumanoids?
A little bit, like where they build the structure around them and they can chip apart or...
Yeah, it's like there's the human element to that, which I have like sort of like multiple pieces that you can put on them. And then they fight these really very detailed monsters. Like the monsters themselves were like what everyone wanted. Nobody wanted the humans. Like, and the monsters were these really great, large, very big figures. They're like 8 feet tall, some of them. Tendril kind of looked like Swamp Thing. And then the other one, Decompose, he was like a horse skeleton, but he stood on like two legs and he had like kind of yellowish shag on him. I don't know. They're very weird figures. They're iconic, but didn't last very long, which is weird because I feel like a lot of people recognize them. And some people most definitely own them, but they weren't a franchise that were around for very long. They had their own cartoon. But then there's that giant blue poster in the background with that vampiric woman screaming. They even cut to it in one of the shots. They like use that as an establishing shot and back out. And that is Hammer Films Vampire Circus.
Which is a film I think we need to check out because one, that poster is iconic. The fact that they cut into it, but when we were researching The Burbs, that movie just kept coming up. Like Joe Dante talks about it a lot. Different people I've heard him talk to on other podcasts, they've all talked about it. It's some film from the 70s, and somehow for vampires who don't have reflections, somehow they trap people in mirrors to get to the vampire. I don't really know. I've only seen the preview.
What?
But we should check it out. You guys out there might want to check it out too.
That sounds very interesting. Yeah, I didn't actually look up this movie. Unfortunately,
1972,
I just looked up
and all the horror directors seem to love it. Was.
Okay, I am game. Absolutely. We can put it on. We'll watch it. We'll review it. We'll put it on a future Patreon episode.
There you go.
If we ever get one of those rolling, there's some great action figures from Masters of the Universe. They have Roboto in the background, who I also own. I own a Roboto. They have Princess of Power Leech figure. And then also they have a Manta figure. I don't know if I have a Leech, but I have a Manta figure. Those are from Hordax Gang. So that's why they're classified as a Princess of Power figure. They have Hannah, Queen of the Vampires. And then they have those great finger hooks. If you guys remember, I think they might still sell them, but they're hooks that go into your wall that hold up your coats and stuff, but they look like fingers.
Nah, yeah, yeah.
Sean actually uses a set of them when he puts his whiteboard down or his chalkboard down and he writes Monster Squad. There's these two little fingers underneath kind of holding it up. It was pretty cute. But yeah, I love that. It's like the, I don't understand the, who built the, they don't go into it, but like, I'm wondering who actually built this clubhouse.
Cause it doesn't feel like it's either in the backyard or in the backwoods between their houses.
Yeah. So in the one of the best scenes of the movie, and probably the most petty I've ever seen a Dracula be, Count Dracula goes through Sean's house, through around the side, into his backyard, and then out his backyard.
Yeah.
And he throws a stick of dynamite in their clubhouse and blows it to smithereens. It's both heartbreaking and endlessly hilarious. Like, I was laughing out loud this time when I saw it, because it is so extremely petty. I mean, this man is, I don't know how many years old, and he's just like, oh, you broke into my house? You kicked my werewolf in the balls and you burned my face with garlic? Well, how about fuck you? I'm going to blow up your whole goddamn clubhouse.
Yeah.
Because I can do that.
He's been around long enough. He knows how important
I'm an adult. I have access to explosives.
I want to blow up a clubhouse. I'll blow up a clubhouse.
Fucking blow up a clubhouse. I don't care. And then I'll turn into a bat and I'll call your daughter or your sister a bitch.
Yeah. And then this clubhouse isn't just like, it's not your typical like square house in a tree. It's like what do you call it? Like a ranch style home.
Yeah. That's what's so weird about it is like it's
almost a multi-level where Rudy's hanging out.
Yeah. I love that. I love like Rudy's views in like a window box. It's like, but I'm wondering, like, are we supposed to believe these kids built it or that the parents helped somehow? Because the only thing that gives me pause is that it's literally over water. Like, if the kids built it, I don't know if I would want to go in it.
Well, because, like, have you ever been in a treehouse before?
I have been in a treehouse, yes. I didn't know anyone who had their own treehouse.
Yeah, but see, I knew a kid who had – I've been in treehouses before. I've been in some that are, like, really rickety and you don't feel safe. Like, no building inspector has come by to make sure that it's secure and should be there.
Yeah.
And then I've been in one that was a really nice – like, it was, like, a friend of a friend. It was a birthday party when I was a kid. But the treehouse – it was, like, it was a house in a tree, but it also had, like, stilts.
Yeah.
That kept it level and, like, secure. So I don't know if that counts.
And this
or not.
Does not have that.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's so funny about this treehouse is that even from the outside looking at it, yeah, it's all these patchwork pieces put together. It looks like it's a bunch of doors, some windows that they scavenged from somewhere, but it kind of meanders, right?
That tree does not seem like it can support.
No, and I love that when you go into the clubhouse, which is like probably clearly a set.
Yeah.
You know, they still have that piece of tree exposed.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It never breaks that fantasy that we are in this big ass tree house. And I love that. Also, I clocked that in the window up where Rudy is, like along with the He-Man figures, there's a little pirate flag. And I feel like there are more than one sort of allusions to Goonies in this movie. Like, I know it gets directly compared.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that's a fair comparison, except for that it's like kids dealing with adults who like are monsters instead of criminals. But I do think there are these weird little moments where they're like not shying away from the fact that they know they're going to get compared to the Goonies. And so they like put the little pirate flag up there, you know. Kids also just had pirate flags. I had pirate flags.
Yeah, pirate flags are a thing, you know.
So it might not have been that at all, but it kind of, you could draw your conclusion that there's also an interesting musical sting in when they find the amulet in the house on Shadowbrook Road. There is a little moment there where it feels very Goonies because there's kind of a moment where he's staring into something that kind of mimics when the Goonies were also, I can't remember what scene it is, but they're also looking down at something. It might have been that moment in the pirate ship.
Yeah.
When
they first open up that bag.
Well, I think it was when they pan around the room and it's all the pirate skeletons.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of music playing, and it's very similar to when Sean is like looking down at the talisman, you know, or the amulet, and they kind of do a similar musical sound, but you know, I don't think it was intentional.
I'm sure the pitch of the film and the budget was, we got these universal properties, all the monsters, we'll bring them back in kind of like a Goonie-esque adventure and with some kids, and let's see. Because the very beginning of that film very much feels like a Spielberg, Christopher Columbus kind of like intro.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think they were going for an exact clone or anything like
not
that.
All,
but
not
I,
at all.
I think there's also moments where when you have two sort of like action adventure, you know, young kid stories, it's like you can't help but like you're going to be in parallel at times.
Well, and I think for some of us, it was like Goonies with an edge. Like these kids were edgier than like than the Goonies kids.
There was one thing. I mean, outside of the actual like language you can't say today, you know, because they're kids and it's the 80s, and so they said some things in this movie you aren't supposed to say. There was one thing that I clocked when Sean is on the walkie-talkie to Patrick. Patrick says something totally inappropriate that I loved, I'd forgotten about, and he's like, all right, 10-4. He goes, you know, good luck, butt love.
Like that's a very 80s.
Like, okay. Oh my god, that's the most 80s thing I've ever seen. Two 12-year-old friends signing off with butt love. Oh my god.
Sean, about this Monster Squad thing. Maybe we could go back to the clubhouse and rethink it with the other guys. That kid being a wuss.
Wuss.
Can it, Frank? Time's running out.
I actually had a dot matrix printer, and I had printed out these really crude Monster Squad, you know, 8.5 by 11 posters that I put out in my garage.
Nice.
And I was like, me and these two other kids who were also kids of the fire department. My father was a firefighter. And so the firefighters would get together, and the other kids, when we'd have parties, they would come over, and I tried to get them to like be in my Monster Squad. And they were all for it, but then it's like, okay, well, we met for that one party.
Yeah.
That was it. That we never revisited it again.
It'd be this epic moment, but then it was like, okay.
Yeah, it was like, oh yeah, you guys aren't gonna like be coming over to my house for meetings or anything. We don't live anywhere near each other. So
meeting adjourned.
We used to build a lot. Back in the day, I just found this picture. I don't know if you saw it. I put it up on our Instagram in our story not too long ago. And it was me and my cousin. And we've got these great neon Pepsi Cola hats on. Because for some reason, we weren't the same age. But my parents had the need to dress both of us like we were twins.
Yeah, it was like different color but matching hats.
And we did that a lot. We had different colored clothing that matched. And one time we went to Washington, D.C. My mom had to go for a conference, and she took myself, my cousin, and me. And she bought me and my cousin these American red, white, and blue matching shirts that we both had to wear on the same day. It was very weird.
You're like, America, but, yeah. Let's do it.
And so in one of the pictures, it brought me back because we're eating pizza off of these great metal TV trays. And these are, we had these both at my grandma's house and also at our house, but it was like fake wood top. Like it was clearly like a rolled out piece of glued down fake wood.
Little vinyl wood.
Yeah, with like a brass sort of frame around it. And then these tiny little legs that would fold out. And somebody right now is screaming that, yeah, I have those too. Yes, we had those.
That paid my way through college.
Yeah, because I mean, they were everywhere. Like, but we had, I think, like two different sets of them. And one of them, I think, actually had the classic like 1980s, early 90s, like geese that every mom's kitchen had, right? Did you ever see those mom kitchens with the geese everywhere?
Yeah, definitely.
Why? My mom had that everywhere. And she didn't like geese.
It's just like you wanted to have that country feel.
Yeah, I don't understand, but she had like a goose cookie jar. She had geese salt and pepper shakers. She had it actually like plastered on the wall. Like we had wallpaper, like bordered wallpaper with geese all over it. And like this baby blue. Like, why? I don't understand. She never said, oh, I love geese so much.
Yeah.
Those TV trays when we were young were really good for making tunnels.
Oh, nice.
It was awesome. And maybe other people did this. We can't be the smartest children in the world. But yeah, if you had enough blankets, you would line up these TV trays. And you could even, if you had enough, like, because we had, I think, 8 of them. So you can make this cool S-curve. And then you just cover them in blankets. And there's this nice dark hallway that you could then use to get into the bigger sort of shelter. You know, the bigger fort. That's really cool.
You know, that's some right there. That's some architectural like history of like have the smallest part lead you into the bigger room.
Yeah, we was like, okay, well, we have this small area, you know, lit by torches, and then we move into a large rotunda.
See, we didn't have those trays. We were like, I was a military kid.
Yeah.
So every 3 years you move to a different spot. So it seemed like, and everyone was moving and coming and going at all points. So it seemed like there was always cardboard around. So we would just make cardboard tunnels, little pop-ups where your head, where you could stand up in parts and have little watchtowers and then go back to crawling through.
That's
you just
rad.
Set it up to like your hallway and it would go into like different rooms.
That's cool. See, we had the rare time when we would get a piece of cardboard big enough for that. Like somebody.
Because you moved how many times as a kid?
I didn't move very many times because I was a privileged young lad who stayed safe right where I was.
There was no need for cardboard.
No. You know? Well, it's like if we got an appliance or something. Yeah. But like, no, I was a young apple-cheeked American boy. I didn't have such luxuries.
Those little toy boxes were only so big to like to do things with. One thing, when I was a kid, like growing up in the Northwest, you would go, I was living on a military base and you'd have lots of thorn bushes and kind of forest around you. And what we would do is we would take cardboard, because we always had cardboard, and you could hollow out the inside of roads, like thorn bushes. So like, and when you're little kids, you kind of just push the cardboard up and you could create these little sort of like caves inside of like thorn bushes. And then you laid the cardboard down and what you would sort of sit in. And so you didn't have posters on the wall. You didn't have lots of, you know, people might just bring some of their snacks and you would just sort of sit in there for a little while, kind of hiding from like the adults and just having your own little moment. But I think the magic of a clubhouse or these little forts or hideouts is they allow you as a kids, you feel like, okay, we could talk about anything, whether you know what to talk about or not. Mm-hmm. But it just feels like this magical place. And so I think for me, the first clubhouse hideout that I went with was the cave from Dead Poets Society.
This is the god of the cave.
The god of the cave.
Charlie, what do you say we start this meeting?
Because it has that similar vibe where there isn't much to it. It's not some spectacular set that they've built that you're like, oh, that's what I want. But it shows you the magic. Like, here's a bunch of guys who are at a prep school. Everything they do is scrutinized and looked at. You know, their entire days are clocked out at this boarding school. So when they finally find out about this cave, this old club, the Dead Poet Society, a bunch of guys reading poetry. No, not a bunch of guys reading poetry. You went there. Poetry oozed from your mouth. Like, you wooed women. It's like, what? But once you see them get in there, they all throw their jackets down. They throw all their snacks around. And they just start – it starts off with poetry, but then it quickly turns into, like – you know, old ghost stories. You have like Nwanda, like Charlie Dalton. He's going to read his poem, but it's like he's got a Playboy centerfold that he just unfolds, you know, and all the boys, of course, like, oh my gosh, where'd you find that? And they're just, you know, it's just a place where you kind of let loose.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is sort of the magic, is a clubhouse can be very elaborate, like in Monster Squad, or it can just be a place where you get a few people together. And for a little while, you feel like you're in your own little secret society. And you kind of just let loose.
When you're young and you can sort of like get away, and especially like a cave, like people can't see you.
Yeah.
It is cool to sort of have this place that's like all to yourself down there. You know, you're you're playing hot licks on your saxophone.
Yeah.
Right?
You're bringing out all these talents because, you know, especially when you're young and you're still finding your voice, like as you're finding your friends, I think the people that really gravitate are when you find those people that have watched some of the same movies, have certain interests. And when you find those moments where there's a catalyst that says, okay, let's share more about ourselves, you know, and start to have a voice towards something. And that's like what I do think is like fun about like the clubhouse or the hideout. It's just a place where even your friends who know you very well, like it's a place where all of a sudden everyone's trying to outdo each other a little bit. And all of a sudden you think you know everything about your best friend. And then you're like, you can play saxophone or, you know, I've never heard that ghost story. Or there's a thing where someone thinks they have something that they want to share. And everyone's like, oh, the hook story. We all know that story. Come on, man.
I told you that story. No, I learned that story when I
was in camp in sixth grade.
Yeah, I went to camp in sixth grade. Yeah. Yeah, it's a night. It's a little wet for my taste as well. But I think you're right. When you have one of the magics of, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but when you have this sort of secure place, you know, even if it's just made out of blankets, like, and you have all these people together, it kind of works as like a way to get out of the world for a minute.
Yeah.
And really focus on each other for a little while.
I think that's the magic. I mean, I think you could find that throughout history. Anyone who started any sort of clubs or organization, it's one of those things that just allows you to play, that whether you're an adult, whether you're a kid, we all know how to play. But when you're all playing one game together, whether it's a board game, whether it's a video game, but I think the clubhouse is a place where all of a sudden you're sort of filling your roles, and maybe you're the fantasy version of yourself in that clubhouse. Maybe you're letting out parts of yourself that you haven't let out before, but it's just a little catalyst. And so no matter how big or small, no matter if you have the fancy clubhouse, the tree, you don't have to be a criminal with a hideout and a bunch of stolen stereos. Sometimes it can just be like a little cave. Or for me, when I was a kid, that little hollowed out like thorn bush, like somehow for, and again, that was probably just a small little sliver of a summer, but like it stuck with me because all of a sudden it was just this little fort for a little while that we all kind of went to. And no one else could get in there. You had to be like a small little kid to fit in there and just kind of hang out and, you know, and just explore.
Yeah.
Then I had religion. Then I had a vision. I could not turn from their revel in derision. Then I saw the Congo creeping through the black, cutting through the forest with a golden track. Then I saw the Congo creeping through the black, cutting through the forest with a golden track. Then I saw the Congo creeping through the black, cutting through the forest with a golden track.
Did you ever make a fort that had like a big open front so you could still see the TV?
Like, oh, totally, yeah.
Where you would like use something like you'd either tie it to the end of like two tall chairs
what
or something.
What we do is you would take, like we did at my grandparents' house, where you would take their, like, you know, they all grandparents seem to have like those TV recliner chairs.
Yeah.
And you would turn them around the opposite direction. And then you would put the blankets going through and then have them connect to little tables.
Yes.
And so you felt like you were like in a little bit of a cave, but you would just, and that's where you would take all the pillows and just lay on the pillows and watch the TV, almost like you were in a blanket igloo or something.
Yeah, it was very strange because it's like, yeah, you always wanted to kind of be able to see the television, yeah. Like especially if you were building them at night. But you also wanted that closed in feeling. We do that at our house now. Like, I've perfected our fort building because we have a couch that if you get a couple of chairs, you can kind of, and you have long enough, we have these long blankets, you can kind of make this really great cocoon and then you make this wonderful opening. The problem is that our living room is so short, even with the opening, you still can't see the TV. So I usually just throw a blanket in front of it and we bring the tablet in.
Nice.
And so it's like, instead of sitting on a couch watching the television, then we just watch a tablet inside this smaller room in our bigger room. And somehow in our minds, it's like, oh, we're doing something.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is,
we couldn't even imagine a tablet when we were kids. That was not, yeah.
Oh, that would have revolutionized fort building. That would have been amazing.
The only thing we had, the only thing I think we had close to a tablet was like, you know, a Game Boy.
Yeah.
When you could take a little portable,
you have that giant, because I had one of those that, of course I did. I had the giant clunky magnifying glass
came
with two battery operated lights.
And so, really just.
Yeah, it made it weigh like about 38 pounds, but you're sitting there and by God, you can see Donatello's stick when you're playing Ninja Turtles.
I mean, if I could go back as a kid and convince my parents, now that I'm a parent and I know what you need to get the kids to shut up in the back.
Yeah.
If I could use that argument as a kid, be like, look, Mom, Dad, it's an investment in your guys' sanity. You guys will buy this once. We'll be back here. We'll shut up. We'll play it. We'll leave you alone.
You have to do that. This will pay silent dividends.
It'll pay for itself over the years. You will get some peace and quiet, I guarantee.
They said it wasn't humanly possible, but now you can have all the power and excitement of Nintendo right in the palm of your hand. Introducing Game Boy. It's portable, it's in stereo, and its games are interchangeable. Plus, Game Boy comes with the outrageous new game, Tetris. And for head-to-head competition, use the revolutionary Video Link and blow your opponent away. Game Boy, only from Nintendo. Now you're playing with power, portable power.
Yeah, I also, on my list, have a cave as well. It's a little bit more elaborate than the one from Dead Poets Society. And I don't even know, you could argue that it's not even a cave because it is actually a sunken hotel.
Oh, this has to be in California or someplace like that.
It is in California. It's somewhere that is the murder capital of the world.
Oh, so we must be talking about Santa Clara.
Oh, you know it. We're going to go to Santa Clara, California, and we are going to go deep, deep down where our humble little boys live. And my next pick is the hideout cave in Lost Boys. I had forgotten how much of a focal point it was. I remember just seeing the part where Michael's like eating the worms and how are your maggots, Michael? You're eating maggots, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't recall, because I haven't seen the movie in a long time, all of the different pivotal sort of scenes that happen there. And, you know, the cool, like when the boys have to return from feeding. And they fly down into the opening of the cave, you know, and up into their roost.
And this cave is what, like a sunken, what is it?
So in the movie, David explains that the cave is actually a sunken hotel that fell into this sort of crevice.
In like the 30s.
In 1906.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the whole set is basically the lobby of this old hotel.
You got the chandeliers, you got some of the old decorations, but then of course you have the 1970s big poster of Jim Morrison.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I love about this place. And when I was a kid, what I really liked about this, very similar to your Dead Poets Society cave, is that this was a gigantic playroom. It was cold and it had like roots growing out of it. And it wasn't comfortable. Like think about being 12 years old and having complete private access to this space.
Hotel lobby.
Right.
Hidden in a cave.
And you've got like how the chandelier has like fallen into the, what used to be this really great fountain behind Star during the whole you're eating maggots, Michael scene. You can see a poster for Munsters Go Home. And I don't know who brought that down there.
Yeah.
At some point, who obtained a Munsters Go Home poster, then brought it down to the cave?
Well, like when all the hippies were bringing down Jim Morrison, I guess they had a square friend or some squares like, I got this Munster poster.
Well, it made me wonder because I was looking up some trivia, as we do. About
learn a little bit more
about the Lost Boys, you know, because we don't want to just bring like, hey, I like this cave. This is neat.
It's cold.
Yeah, it's like, you want to have a little bit more meat. So something I found out originally at the very end of the movie, they were going to do a pull-in shot that was a mural on the side of one of the hotel walls. And it was clearly going to be a man who looked exactly like Max talking to four young gentlemen. And so it was going to establish that Max and his boys had been around since maybe at least the early 1900s. And to me, that would explain all of the different decoration choices they've gone through over the years. So like at one point, maybe they didn't think the monsters were cool.
Yeah, like the 60s, the mid-60s was like, oh, great. And then somewhere 72, they're like, oh, you know who's really cool? Jim Morrison, or 69.
Well, yeah, and so they found this Morrison poster. They put that up.
Yeah.
And then they're like, and that's fine because he's never not stopped being cool. You know. So it's like they just kept that up.
And in like 70 some years, they never decided to make it. Don't make it too comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, we'll throw some posters in here, but you know.
Well, because it's like they're usually out on the boardwalk at night. That's true. Know, they don't.
And they
need,
hang upside down when they sleep. So it's not like
they have very few guests.
Yes, that's true.
So
Chinese takeout, though,
that they can get. But yeah, I'm thinking to myself, you know, as an adult, you know, what I would have been like as a kid to hang out in there. And dude, it would have been so cool to have like all your own burn barrels. Like, you know how much shit I just would have been burning all day, just having my own, a place where no one knows that I am. And I have these giant metal barrels full of fire all the time. I would have gone up and I would have just brought stuff down there to burn. One thing I was surprised they didn't have is they didn't seem to have, that I could tell, they didn't have a stereo in there. They had no electronic entertainment whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that would have to change.
Well, you got candles. You know, this was before battery power. Well, I mean, you could have got a boombox in there by 87.
Yeah. I can't remember in that movie if everything in there was supposed to be lit by burn barrels and candles. It seemed like it was.
It seemed like it was, yeah.
Like, that's why they had so many around.
You know, and that's why, I mean, you know, Joel Schumacher, like, they really use that sort of, that orange hue light. So, like, it always felt like candlelight, even when they attack the guys on the bonfire.
Yeah.
They always had that warm light to make it feel like it was coming from fire.
Funny thing about that, too, that was another thing in that scene where they're in the tree and they finally change for the first time. Something I never noticed before that I think is really cool is Joel Schumacher or someone, whoever designed the vampires, decided to do something a little different than other people did. And he made their vampire teeth
a little extended.
Didn't use their canines.
Yeah, yeah.
He used the teeth right next to your front teeth.
Yeah, yeah. And they kind of poked out a little bit. Like,
yeah. And so what ended up happening, which I really liked, is they made them look more like snakes. And especially when I think it was David who like bit into that bald guy's top of his head like an apple.
And squirts out and...
Yeah. And I had not noticed that as a kid, I guess. And I'm not poring over pictures from, you know, the Lost Boys. But it was something I found really cool. I noticed that. Andy hit the mic.
Oops, sorry about that.
Funny thing, though. Couple of quick facts that I think are fun. In that movie, the word Michael is said 114 times in a 96-minute run movie.
Wow.
So think about that. And... yeah, you can't unhear it once you know that.
Which also, Michael is like one of the, I think that was the most common name of that people called boys in the early 80s. If you were born in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
I think Michael is like the number one name.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I only know that because my old roommate was Michael Sapienza. And, and yeah, it was just one of those fun facts you hear after a night of drinking.
Yeah. No, another thing that I thought was really cool and kind of goes to the magic of movie making and just being in the right place at the right time. There's the scene where the Frog Brothers, they just staked...
Edgar Allen.
Yes, Edgar and Allen, the Frog Brothers. Beautiful, beautiful pun. I'm surprised they weren't just called like John and Abel Vamp Killer.
Yeah.
I think they Kill Bill S. Preston Esquire.
But yeah, and he had that show in the early 90s on like the Idiot Box. Or
yeah.
It's a lot of variety, freaky.
Well, yeah, and then he went on to do some really good directing. We're getting off on a tangent here, but it's worth checking out. Yeah. He became a really great director, and he just recently came out with that movie, Kill All Neighbors. I think it's on Shudder. It might be on something else. Totally worth a watch. It's amazing. It's progressive rock. It's practical effects. It's a fantastic horror movie.
But in 1987, the Frog Brothers, well, they take him out.
Long story short, they kill him. Then David and all the other guys wake up. David starts chasing the Frog Brothers out of their hideout. And the boys end up dragging his hand into the sunlight. And it ignites in that very cool effect. And it starts smoking. And then they get away, and the camera pulls in on Kiefer Sutherland's face, and a tear rolls down his eye. And what that was, what you're witnessing, is a perfect timing of that take, because that was, that cry was happening because those contact lenses in his eyes were killing him. And they're very painful for everyone to wear. And so immediately, when they came in on that that zoom in, a tear just happened to come out of his eye at the same time.
See, I was thinking, here's little Donald Sutherland's son, and you know, here's some method acting coming through, and look at that perfect tear.
But no, it was just a beautiful happy accident. I love hearing stories like that about movies. You know, you're just in the right place at the right time. You took a bad thing. You know, your contact lens is burning your eyeballs out, and you turn it into a really good cinematic moment.
Pure genius.
One thing about living in Santa Carla I never could stomach. All the damn vampires.
We will move on to your next hideout, clubhouse, or fort.
My next would be, I think I'm going to go with Gleaming the Cube.
Okay.
So it was a little skate film from the 80s.
It's a bold move.
And it's just a little scene in the movie, but there's this little bunker in the backyard of Christian Slater's friend Yabo's house. And it's just a great little... When I was a kid, I remember it being like a manhole. I was thinking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But as I watch it again, I'm like, no, it's a bunker. There's a little gate, a little thing that you open up. And they kind of climb down into this place. It's got a little mini half pipe. There's this like mural in the background with like a Thrasher banner, a little spray painted Gilligan Island, a little workstation where they work on their skateboards. He's got a little bed in there, some music and TV. You can definitely see some of the bunker, like some of the food and plates and other stuff.
Yeah, it looks very similar to the shelter we work out of.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I was very perplexed because I was just like, I lived in California at the time when I saw this movie. And I was like, a little flash flood goes through there. This whole place is going to fill up with water. But no, there's a little airtight seal at the top. And I guess it's a bunker. You think California coast. So maybe this is left over from like the nuclear scare.
Yeah, the whole thing between his house and the pool and the bunker, it all feels very Cold War. That whole movie, what I like about it is that it was shot near Disneyland, and I'm a big Disneyland fan. So seeing 1980s Disneyland, like even little bits, seeing the Matterhorn, you know, seeing like parts of the parking lot, like it's very cool.
Yeah.
I really like it. I've spent a lot of time at Disneyland, and so I've been around the streets that they're filming on, like walking up and down all of those different areas, you know, like Harbor Boulevard, Catella. I've been up and down all of those. So I'm like seeing those same things I've experienced in the 2000s, but like through the lens of like the mid 80s. It was very cool.
And I don't want to spoil this for anyone. So if you haven't seen Gleaming the Cube, maybe pause for a second. But, you know, part of the storyline is we find out that somebody has done something mean to his brother, and we find his brother hung in a motel room. But when they open the curtains, right across the street is Disneyland and the Matterhorn.
Yeah.
Not a place you typically would go.
Yeah, it's because that hotel still exists. I think it's called the Best Western now, but it was like a mid-century 60s themed hotel both in the movie, but and also in real life. It had a different name in real life than from the movie. But yeah, they opened that window, and then there's that beautiful white top of the Matterhorn.
Yeah, and so Christian Slater obviously is like, something's up. I don't think everything... This doesn't smell right. I'm going to investigate.
Yeah.
But I do love when he goes to Yabo's house, you know, that little bunker, that little clubhouse. And then he's got this little bunker in the backyard. I mean, it was every skate kid's dream.
Yeah, it was like he was like a punk rock philosopher. And they like his parents like tolerated his artistic like breakout.
His mom in the movie is comedian Rita Redner.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's already some kind of sense of humor like, oh, go have fun. Go be enlightened and go enjoy the backyard skater kids.
Oh, man. Yeah, that I noticed a lot of the tools that he had down there are tools that my grandpa used to have. Like the set dressing was really good in the fact that they had like real tools you'd be using.
In a very non-ventilated area.
Yeah. But it was cool because it was like later when he asked him to like sort of like build
the skateboard.
That cool skateboard. It's like, yeah, bunker, you know,
it's also like a little mini skate shop,
which I also think bunker is different from is sort of in that line of headquarters, lairs, bunkers.
See, I would say it would be a starter lair because until the big bomb happens,
yeah,
it can still be a little bit of a hideout eventually.
Well, yeah, I would certainly call it. The way he's using it, I would call it more of a hideout,
okay,
for sure.
Yeah.
But I would say that if we were going to talk about actual bunkers, that would go on that bigger list that we were trying to talk about earlier.
I think you're right, yeah.
The first thing I remember messaging you is that his little bunker down there looks almost exactly like the sewer playset that Playmates put out for the Ninja Turtles.
Exactly.
This movie came out before the Ninja Turtles came out,
yeah.
But if you were a huge Ninja Turtles fan and had that bunker back there, man, you could have had a field day dressing that up. You could have made that almost like a one-for-one set.
And I'm sure that was probably one of those like early day cheap bunkers that like during the 60s Cuban Missile Crisis, that thing probably just popped up and you probably saw that all over the country.
They'd put a stove down there. All
thinking that
like,
the nuclear war will happen and then after a week everything will blow over and we'll just go back, you know. Like no one was thinking, like, honestly, are you really gonna live the rest of your life down there?
I know, I like the short-sightedness of it because it's got as if it's a couple of cots. It has this tiny little kitchenette.
Yeah.
It's got basically what, like a regular like a pantry for like maybe a weekend of food.
Yeah.
Right? It was very
We'll camp out during the during the big one.
Camp out. We'll camp out through the oblivion.
Exactly.
Civil defense officials recommend that for the best fallout protection, your family have these two things: an approved fallout shelter, and enough supplies to enable you to stay in it for a maximum of 2 weeks. Within that 2 week period, it is estimated that community resources will have been restored to give you some help. A short time later, assistance should be available from the state and federal governments.
Yeah, I don't remember my parents ever coming by when I was little. Like, we'd build the fort. They didn't care about that, or they'd kind of help get the materials together. But when we were in it, unless my mom came by and was like, hey, do you guys want some sandwiches? You know, we were kind of just left alone to do that. Like now I am expected with my kids to get inside the fort and like be with them in there most of the time.
The same thing with my daughters. We'll set up a fort and like you got to be part of it.
Yeah. But back in the day, my parents did not want to be in the fort. They didn't usually help us build the forts. They were really like, this is a great opportunity to go do other things and be away from you. But I also don't think parents thought like that as much. Like, because we think like that because we're expected to be around our kids so much.
Yeah.
I think my parents were just like, I'm going to mow the lawn.
Well, see,
that's it. Like, there's no discussion about this. I'm just going to do that.
Well, our parents somehow, they grew up. I don't know if our generation ever grew up. It's like we had our own blanket forts. We then watch TV shows with blanket forts, and now we have kids with blanket forts. Why wouldn't we want to join in?
Yeah. No, and I do like it. Like, just a while back, we actually, me and my kids built a fort, And it was completely enclosed, and we got in our tablet, and we were watching like short horror movies. I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and they love short horror. It kills me at night because my son now, he really, really wants to watch these movies, but then when it's bedtime, I can't turn the lights off anymore. So, you know, I did it to myself, but I love short horror, and so if they're willing to watch it, I'm willing to watch it. But that was really cool. I like that, you know. I'd rather have those memories than not have them. You know what I mean? Like, you can wash the dishes anytime, but it's like, how often are you going to think back to like when you were in like this closed in little fort that you made with your kids, you know?
So what do you got for us next?
Well, it's a fort that is sort of like abundant, and I'll explain what I mean. So my next pick is Troy and Abed's fort that they build in season 2, episode 9, Conspiracy Theories and Interior Design from Community. Give me some more time in a dream. Give me the hope to run out of steam. Somebody say it could be here. We could be roped up, tied up, dead. They sort of have the B plot in this episode. The A plot is that Jeff has made up a professor.
Professor Professorson.
Yes. Also then known as Professor Woolley, and then also then known as Professor Garrity. He goes through 3 different monikers, played by Kevin Corrigan.
Yeah, he's in Sons of Beverly Hills. He's in, like, he's also in Goodfellas, I think.
He pops up everywhere. He's a fantastic actor.
He's in Superbad.
Yeah, he's one of those great actors where you're like, oh, where do I know that guy from? Because he's everywhere. But he's a fake professor who pops up out of nowhere after Jeff made up a professor. And then there's this conspiracy that forms with Jeff and Annie and Professor Professorson. And
the dean
and dean and the dean and what's going on, and it's all great, and you should check out that episode. I think it's one of their better ones for, like, if you want a glimpse into sort of how silly it can be, but at the same time kind of clever and fun. It's a good one to pop in on. But the subplot is that Troy and Abed are going to spend the weekend together in the dorms at Abed's place. They decide that they're going to build a blanket fort, and they end up using pillows in it. Just as I had said, they use pillows structurally, but they use the blankets as like the bigger part. And then what ends up happening is all of the people from the dorm decide that they're going to help, and they build this giant roaming blanket hallway fort, like just this huge fort that has, like, Troy at one point says that they have a Pierce's mom's memorial section.
You should check it out when you get to
Yeah, they have.
I love Jillian Jacobs has I want nothing to do with it. It's a pillow fort. We're adults. And then she's in, like, the little hip room at some point.
Yeah. See, it's like this fort is so, and what I love is that they kept to this structural style of a blanket fort. This entire thing is sprawling and massive. And at one point they have the Latvian Day parade going through,
because they had all the permits.
Yeah, they had all the proper permits. And which is funny, little bit of trivia for that is that it actually aired, the first episode aired on Latvian Independence Day.
Of course it was, because it's Mark Harmon and he's going to time all that stuff out perfectly.
Yeah. So it's just this great, absurd blanket fort, but they kept the integrity of what a blanket fort is like. There's people in there playing Scrabble. And, you know, they have all their snacks and fancy foods, and they're all sitting on pillows, and everyone's in their pajamas. And so even though it's over the top because there's just so much of it sprawling everywhere, and, you know, there's different rooms, like they talk about going through the Turkish district, and they actually go through a beaded curtain.
And as everybody's chasing each other, in someone else's hands, they might have wanted to, like, make this elaborate where all of a sudden you're running around intense. These guys are, they're crawling, they're speed crawling.
Yeah, chasing they're each doing other. Everything you would do in a regular blanket fort. They have headlamps on, they're crawling around. At no point did Professor Garrity think to just lift the blanket and just exit the fort and go running. Like, he stayed confined to the rules of the blanket fort.
Well, and there's a social construct there. It's an entire community now.
Right.
I think the second you get in there, you start to realize these are the social rules. I will follow them.
Yeah. And so I thought that was really cool. And if I could participate in a blanket fort like that, absolutely I would.
Definitely.
All right.
Unless I got too mainstream.
You know what this means? We've gone mainstream. Initiate Protocol Omega.
So, like, when I lived in a military base in California, we were, like, in the middle of the Mojave Desert. You were, like, it was, like, you were on a base, you had a fence around you, and then you had the military base where all the military stuff happened outside of, like, the housing. And then you also had fences that then took you out where, like, the civilian, like, into, like, this town that everybody lived in. And we would just, in the summer times, like, we just would spend all day just going around exploring stuff. And one time, to get out of the Navy base into, like, the more, like, the like, on base, you'd go under, like, these, like, coyote holes. Like, the coyotes would dig holes under fences that you could just slide in and out of.
Yeah.
And so there was, like, an area where there were some, like, you know, just bits and pieces of, like, jets and planes. And so for a summer, for, like, probably just, like, a few weeks, we turned it into, like, a little fort where we just went in there. And you were, like, in the hollow part of a plane, just a small little part. And we would, like, take, like, I remember we'd take magazines, we'd take other stuff. One of our friends, it was, like, a mini heist. It was, like, they were going away to, like, Disneyland or something for the weekend. So he left his window open, and we were supposed to sneak into his room, then go into his dad's room and take some of, like, the Playboys or dirty magazines that we took back to this, like, little, like, plane fort. And in retrospect, I'm like, what's funny is, like, he could have just taken it from his dad. It was like there was no need to, like, make it a whole heist that we, like, drew out.
He was making you a patsy is what exactly. He had deniability.
He's had deniability. What's funny, too, is, like, I think it was, like, a time, too, where, like, neither him or his dad ever talked about it because I don't think either one wanted to broach it. So it just was, like, this, like, non-thing. But yeah, it was just one of those things in the summertime where you would just – we had this little fort that you went out to. There was, like, another part where we'd ride our bikes and you'd ride them off base to go to a movie. But you weren't allowed to come back on base without your parents. You weren't supposed to – like, we weren't supposed to leave base to go to town.
Yeah.
And so we would just find these little holes – and we would just slide under the holes with our bike and then go. And part of us were like, how secure is this military base that a bunch of kids on, like, BMX bikes can just find ways in and out of different
areas?
How are
you getting the bikes through, though? Are the holes big enough to shove? You would just shove the bike under?
It's sand. Yeah. So you throw the bike over the fence.
Okay, you're chucking the bike over.
Oh, you chuck the bike over the fence. Okay. And then you slide yourself under, you know, because we're all
so,
like,
you're at a military base.
Yeah.
Chucking BMX bikes over the fences, you're physically going under a fence.
Yeah.
And then no one is seeing this.
No one's seeing this. No one cares. I mean, I think there was one time where we got caught where, like, military police – there was one time we got caught and the military police, like, drive us home. And then the only reason our parents were upset, like, all of the dads, the military dads, they were only upset because when they went to work the next day, their COs are like – why are your kids going in and off the base?
Oh, man.
You know, they didn't care that we did it. They only got caught that they have to, that we got caught. Yeah. That we had to, you know, but.
I say that to my kids sometimes, like, when they do something and I'm like, oh, God, just see, this is the problem. You guys were fine until now I have to be involved. now I'm annoyed. It was, you guys were fine until this had to become something I'm involved in now. Man, that's so cool.
Much more than just a series of small, isolated incidents, it's now apparent that an organized criminal element is at work. And at the moment, business is good. So good, in fact, that there appear to be no eyewitnesses to any of these crimes. With complaints ranging from purse snatching to breaking and entering, police switchboards have been swamped with the angry voices of more and more citizens who have fallen prey to the recent surge of crime that continues to plague the city.
Andy, you have one final pick to kind of take us home.
Well, I think I found it interesting that you noticed that in Gleaming the Cube, the bunker reminded you of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toy.
Yes.
Because when I was thinking of hideouts and clubs, the next thing I went after Gleaming the Cube was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Not their hideout, but the Foot Clan soldiers' hideout.
Yes.
Like,
and I would call this, by my own definition now, thinking about it, I would almost say this is a lair, but I don't think enough scheming and planning goes on to actually give it lair status.
And I would say it's a starter lair because there's still a simple, like, essentially this is like Pinocchio, Pleasure Island.
Yeah.
They're getting a bunch of kids, come on in. We got video games. We got people playing music. We got a skate park in here. We have kids playing pool, smoking cigars.
Oh,
we have other kids. There's a roulette table, and the kids are throwing down their money. We have a poker game where when somebody wins and everyone's like, oh, you know. So this is all these kids, runaways, your parents don't want you, you're in the city. Come on over here. Everything will be fine. But what are they actually doing? They're recruiting these kids to be the Foot Clan soldiers. So Shredder hasn't quite got his army going yet. They're still kind of nickel and diming, stealing stuff out of trucks. They're hiding out. It hasn't turned into a lair yet.
Yeah, I would honestly say there's a mix between the back half of this building is where the warehouse is. That's almost more the hideout. The front half is almost more a clubhouse. You almost have a hybrid.
Yeah.
And I thought very interesting. I was looking this place up. I was trying to find some still shots. And it turned out that the building itself was called the East Warehouse on Lairdmond Island. So somehow they worked Eastman and Laird into the title of this building.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Which I think it's actually just across the river from Manhattan, and they're in like Williamsburg
yeah.
in the early 90s, late 80s.
Well, and these two kids go in, they go in what looks like almost like a defunct mental hospital. Like there's this orange brick around the outside, but then also you're clearly in what's a defunct, almost like factory. But then the back part is a warehouse. So it's all over. Like
yeah.
this...
And this reminded me of like in Williamsburg, like especially in the early 2000s, like on Kent Avenue, there was like this building that looked kind of bombed out and just an old building. And I think it was called like the Secret Robot something. But it was a place you went and just saw indie bands and whatever. But it kind of had that feel. I mean, obviously not the video games, the skate park, but just these old empty buildings that had turned into clubs for a little while before all the condos came and you know.
Nobody knows about New York real estate.
Yeah,
I like that it makes you mad. None of us understand anything about what you're saying, but you're very passionate about
well,
it.
Well, you know, it's a movie that takes place in New York.
It's true.
And their secret hideout is in Brooklyn, right across the river.
I know.
They steal all this. How they're getting everything from Manhattan to Brooklyn like that so well. I mean, I guess
they're using that one small van.
They're using that one small van and they've been at work for a long time, but they still haven't turned it into a lair.
Yeah. No, and when I watched this movie, like I watched it in the theaters when I was a kid when it came out, and that scene where they first have the kids go under the fence, go into the building, it hit me twofold. One, I was like, this is awesome. You have all the video games set up and like all the neon lights and the rock and roll going on and like the palettes of like Pepsi. But then I'm like seeing this type of kid who's in this clubhouse. These kids look kind of rough. Like, I don't know if I would actually want to come here. Like, these guys would probably beat me up. Like, I'm a dork. Like, there's this one girl who's like wearing like a leather biker's hat and she's like popping gum, and she walks from over like standing next to this guy at the pool table, then she goes over and like stands behind this guy playing video games and puts her arm around him, and I was like, that girl's pretty easy.
Yeah, no.
I was like, I don't know if I could hang with these guys. Like, You got this girl in leather, like, walking around touching guys. Like, I don't know, man.
I came from a different home life than you, where some of these people reminded me of people that I might have hung out with when I was younger. Some of these people definitely would be scary.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was like, I remember watching Ninja Turtle. I loved that movie in theaters when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I remember for a split second, I'm like, you know, it wouldn't take much to seduce me into becoming – like, I know I'm not going to be a Ninja Turtle. I could be a Foot Clan. I mean – to go hang out in that hideout for a little while.
Yeah.
But then again, this is why the Foot Clan falls so easily. It's just a bunch of like...
It's a bunch of non-committal kids.
Who are just there to play video games. Or when Sam Rockwell shows up, hey, you guys smoke? Sam Rockwell has, yeah, regular menthol.
I know. And it's... I didn't know that was Sam Rockwell until I watched it again. It'd been so long.
Yeah.
And he hadn't grown into his face yet. So he looked very ambiguous. Like, yeah. It did not really look like him. The voice a little bit.
Yeah, but like when this movie came out, you wouldn't have known he was unless you were really into indie cinema.
Yeah, it surprised me when I watched it again. I was like, holy shit, that's Sam Rockwell. So when I was rewatching the movie, I was pausing it way too many times because I was trying to see all of the different video games that they had. Because the only one they really focus on is NARC.
There's NARC, there's the basketball game.
Yeah, but I can't even tell what basketball game that is.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if they turned the light up too high, and so it was washing out the rest of those kind of
like, you know, there have to be some fighting games in there.
Oh, yeah, there were different fighting games. I was like, I was looking for Double Dragon, seeing if that was in there.
I would have been kicked out. I would have been like, where's Miss Pac-Man? And they'd be like, all right, buddy, you can go.
Get the hell out of here. But yeah, so I was scanning for all of this different stuff, and it's like I clocked like a bunch of pallets of like Diet Pepsi, regular Pepsi, Mountain Dew. They just have them in these stacks just everywhere, right? And all the kids are like drinking Pepsi. And then there's this weird moment, and I had to watch it a few times, where this kid comes running around and it does like a crane shot, and there's a kid laying on the ground, and he's kind of looks like one of the pirates from Pirates of the Caribbean. He looks like he's had too much rum.
Yeah.
And he's surrounded by Whitman's samplers.
Yeah.
He has Whitman's samplers sugar everywhere. Like
the ultimate sugar crash.
And he's just laying back like a man in the street, like a bum. And he's just shoving chocolate into his face.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all of these kids, they're so bad, but it's like they're literally gorging themselves on like cola and candy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there are definitely a few of them smoking. That one young fella who takes that shot at the pool table, and he's got that Havana in his mouth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't remember that as a kid because it's like a blink and you miss it moment. Well, but I love that they put that little touch in there. He's just like, I can have all the chocolate I want. He's gorging himself.
And that was so 80s because, I mean, and that when that movie came out, I had already started skating with friends. And I remember like living on a Navy base in the Mojave Desert, and there was like this officer's like golf course. And that time, they were so used to sending caddies and other kids to go get them cigarettes. There were like cigarette machines, and kids would just go get cigarettes and then take them back to like adults. That the first time I ever smoked, we just went to one of these like we had this whole elaborate story where we're getting the cigarette for somebody. So we go, we put our money in the cigarette machine. I think we got Camels. And we were ready to get caught. We were ready to tell somebody, oh, yeah, so-and-so, Mr. Jackson, you know, Johnson wants cigarettes. No one questioned us. No one looked at us. No one cared. We were like, it was that easy to get cigarettes in the 80s.
Man.
And we went behind, it was so like cliche. We went behind like a trash can, like one of those big dumpsters. We like lit the cigarettes and coughed, and it was like awful.
You got any cigarettes? Regular or menthol?
All right. Well, we've come to that part of the show where we have talked as much as we're going to talk. I don't really know if we have much more to share with you. I would really like for you guys to share with us. When you follow us on Instagram and Facebook, which I know you will, at shelter.from.oblivion. And you can follow us also, I think, from that same name on Facebook.
Let us know. Do you agree that everything that we said were hideouts and clubs or forts? Or did we cross the line? Or some of the places we described maybe layers?
Are you pro pillow fort? Are you pro blanket fort? But we really appreciate you guys coming down to the shelter today and spending a little bit of time with us. We'll hopefully see you later.
Bye.
My parents made me take the clarinet for years.
I love the clarinet.
I hated it.